get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Hello, everyone. Merry Christmas. It's the last podcast before Christmas. So I just wanted to say Merry Christmas to everyone. Hope you have a great Christmas. And if you've got any time off and spending it with family, hope you enjoy that too. So Merry Christmas, everybody. Podcast will be running through the Christmas period into the new year. So we'll have another one between Christmas and New Year as well. So look out for that. I just wanted to say as well, we've got our 12 days of Christmas sale running at the moment. So if you've missed out so far, you've missed out on a few. We've got a different sale every single day. Sign up onto the mailing list through our contact form at nichewebsite.builders to make sure you don't miss out on the last few before now and Christmas Eve when it all ends. We also got our 12 fresh domains of Christmas. So that's brand new domains that we have done some research on to work out a good niche to go into, and done a write-up for that so that you can kind of follow along and hopefully get started in the new year with a new site and a fresh domain. So they're available on our site under the domains section, and we've been publicizing those on our emails as well. So go check that out. But what we've got coming up next week, Adam.
Yeah, awesome. So Merry Christmas as well. I feel like we should be wearing, we should have put Santa hats on or something more festive to do this message. Yeah. But a Merry Christmas will have to suffice. So coming out today, same day as this podcast, which is the 20th, we've got Dave from Niche Website Builders. He's on Craig Campbell's channel. So we've partnered with Craig. Dave's going on to Craig's channel to talk about how to get started with website investing. So just from the basics, from the ground up, if you are new and you think, how do I build a portfolio or how do I build this as a long-term kind of revenue stream, then Dave's going to be covering those kinds of topics with Craig. And there's always great questions from Craig's audiences. So that's going to be an exciting one. And then on Thursday, which is the 22nd, we are doing the Niche Website Builders Christmas special stream, where we've invited some special guests along. We'll be doing lots of fun stuff, probably having a beer or two, just winding down for Christmas. And it'll be lovely to celebrate with you guys. If you can spare a couple of minutes, if you can spare an hour, however long, pop in, say hello, see some friendly faces that you know probably from other channels, some special guests. And yeah, just celebrate with us. And we're going to have a nice Christmas and a nice new year. And that's what we've got coming up. So I think that's everything. Hope you enjoy this episode of the podcast with James. It sounds like a really good one. And if we don't catch you on the live streams, we'll catch you in the new year. So have a great one, everyone.
Yep. Merry Christmas.
Bye-bye.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders podcast. Today, we have Mark Hero, or Mantic59. If you are in that shaving, I guess, niche or have an enthusiasm for shaving, you might know him from his screen name. But Mark owns a website called Sharpologist.com. Essentially, he's made a living from shaving, and that is things from tutorials through to affiliate commissions and I guess partnerships with different brands within that shaving niche. So we dive into his website, kind of the underpinnings of his success with his site. His site's been around for a long time. It is known as one of, I guess, the top shaving site on the internet. So we go into some details there around his content, what he's done to grow the site, what he's doing now, what he's looking to do in the future, some of his revenue and traffic numbers, and everything in between. So if you want to hear a story of someone who's been in the game for 10 plus years, sit back and enjoy.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
All right. Welcome to the Niche Website Builders podcast. Today we have Mark Herro. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you for having me.
No, thank you for coming on. Obviously, you're well recommended from one of our previous guests, Doug Cunnington. I'm sure everyone knows Doug, who's been on the podcast. So of course we had to get Mark on. But before we dive further into this podcast, I want to know, I think this will blend well with having you kind of, go into a bit of your background, but how did you get into the shave or shaving niche? Because when I think of going into a niche website, I'm not thinking shaving. I might be maybe beard care or men's grooming, but to nail down on shaving, how did you get there?
It is the most random thing possible, isn't it? My formal career background is actually broadcasting and telecommunications. So that makes shaving doubly
I was going to say that doesn't help.
Strange, right? It all started actually when I began in the 90s dating a nice young lady who is now my wife. At that time, I shaved with an electric razor for 30 years, never thought about it, buzz, buzz, zip, zip, done in 2 minutes. But she absolutely adored the feeling of my face when it was freshly shaved. And that feeling just wouldn't last very long. I had a 5 o'clock shadow at 2 o'clock kind of thing.
Yeah.
Still didn't think much about it. We got married in early 2000s and... In 2004, we went to Las Vegas for our wedding anniversary. And while we were there, one morning she said, don't shave today. I have a anniversary present for you. And she took me to a shop called The Art of Shaving, which you may not have heard of. They were recently acquired by Gillette and Procter & Gamble a few years ago. But they had a store in Las Vegas. Actually, they have several stores in Las Vegas where they did old-fashioned barber shaves. And she treated me to an old-fashioned barber shave with the hot towel and the lather and the straight razor and the whole bit. And the results were so dramatic that I had never felt my face as soft and smooth as it was. And of course, my wife was just thrilled. I decided I needed to look more into this type of shaving. And that's kind of what the whole thing started with. So I have my wife to thank for it. Now when I buy shaving stuff, I say, hey, sweetheart, I need to buy this $200 razor. And she says, oh, okay, no problem. And that's the way things have gone.
Well, it's a business expense now, so it's all tax deductible.
Absolutely.
So do you want to take me then how you turned that into an online business? Because I guess that's, I get some of my stuff, I guess, barber, razor, shave through here. I mean, I still have my beard, but that's not the first thing I think of after getting a hot towel and a little barber shave here. So do you want to maybe dive into how that kind of came into fruition?
Sure. At the time, in the early 2000s, there wasn't a whole lot of information regarding old school shaving like that. The vast majority of the products were, multi-blade cartridges, shave foam from a can, and that's about it. There were a few niche forums that I did get into to learn more about this style of shaving, and got more and more into it, and eventually I was able to just not receive advice on these forums, but I was also able to give advice eventually. Mm-hmm. So I became very active there. And a discussion started one day on one of these sites saying, somebody needs to do a video on how to shave with old style kit. And the response at the time from the forum members were like, nah, you know, you really need to see it in person. I don't think this would really work very well, that kind of response. But at the same time, by coincidence, I had just been to a conference for the job I was in where I won a camcorder. So I decided to make a few test videos and see if I couldn't do something about this. Made a few test videos, showed it to the guys in the forums, and somehow it didn't seem so difficult to do. They had a very positive response. So I redid them and then uploaded them to this new service called YouTube. And that's where I originally got started. My channel on YouTube still exists. I haven't used it in a while, but it's still there. From there, it was strictly a passion project, beer money from, the YouTube advertising kind of thing, very little money to it. And one day, one of my converts that I call them, a guy who had watched my videos and then got into it himself, he suggested I start a website. And I didn't know the first thing about it, but he did. He happens to own a digital media company in Milwaukee. So he helped me set up domain, website, the whole bit. And that's how Sharpologist.com was born in 2011. And I started doing website stuff along with the video stuff. And by 2015, with a combination of affiliate marketing, banner advertising, and then I was also going around the country doing presentations to spa barbershops. Oh, wow. to their clients about how to do this. I realized I could make this full time. I actually took early retirement from my desk job and took the site full time in 2015.
That is awesome to be able to do that with someone that it seems so random, but something that obviously you became,
it really
became
does.
Very
it,
passionate about.
But it also appears that a lot of people have trouble shaving. And once they get the proper techniques and the proper skills to shave properly, some portion of them jump down the rabbit hole into the whole old school wet shaving game.
Mm. So then when you first started the site, did you have any knowledge or anything about SEO or, as you mentioned, affiliate marketing or banner marketing? How did those come about?
No.
Or develop?
Initially, it was banner advertising. I discovered the Amazon affiliate program, got onto that. And again, it was basically just beer money for a couple of years. And then suddenly it suddenly ramped up and the site really took off.
Okay.
And then I joined a couple additional affiliate platforms. Gotcha. Share a sale, Refersion, Commission Junction, that kind of thing, and started kind of mixing up the whole revenue mix.
Nice. And then from, I guess, 2015 to now, how have you, I guess, what has been the game plan in growing the site? Because obviously you have your affiliate side, you're traveling around doing some things, but there's always more that you can do, especially with sites like this. So what else have you done?
Right. I would say a large majority of it is SEO, finding the keywords that are trending along with the keywords that are strictly in the niche that aren't necessarily in a wider Google setting, kind of mixing those in. I started getting into a little bit of content gap analysis, again with SEO, and that's primarily where I've taken the site. I have done a little bit with social media. I have discovered in my particular niche, social media is just not particularly popular. Mm-hmm. I get a fairly small percentage of referrals from social media, even though I'm relatively active on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, that kind of thing. For whatever reason, my niche just isn't very aware or use social media very much. I do have some automated and some semi-automated applications I use to make things easier on social media for me, so I don't spend a whole lot of time on it because the response just isn't there right now.
Yeah, I think a lot of people find, I find similar things with social, like I don't want to put all my time into something that's not going to give back what, as you mentioned, maybe SEO and Google's going to do, potentially YouTube or something else, which I can do it, and maybe I can post onto socials here and there just to repurpose the content. But yeah, I'm not going to spend my time doing it, for sure.
It can be just such a time suck that it's a terrible, terrible return on investment. I use a couple things. I use Social Bee as a scheduler, and I also use Missing Letter, which I find very valuable because it's got an AI engine where it will take relevant quotes from an article on the blog and a picture from the blog post and create a one-year drip campaign from it. I'll spend maybe 10 minutes tweaking the campaign and it's done for a year.
Oh, okay. I need to go check that out. That sounds very helpful.
Yeah, it really has been.
Awesome. Do you want to dive into, let's go back to your content gap analysis and maybe explain your process and what you're looking for when you're doing that.
It's a little difficult because, frankly, and not to toot my own horn, I don't mean to do that, but my site is really the go-to site for traditional shaving that isn't a vendor or a forum. So there are obviously other blogs and websites devoted to wet shaving, but mine is the biggest. So I have to be a little careful on my content gap because the apps I use will end up comparing me to like one of the large wet shaving vendors. And I doubt I will grab the number one SEO spot for a particular razor, for example, from a vendor that's been selling them for, you know, ages. I do get into tutorials and I do fairly good with that. And kind of a best of, not really listicles, but I try to do best products for a particular kind of shaving, and that I look for opportunities in the gaps for that.
Okay, that makes sense. Before I dive into some of those, are you able to share how much traffic per month your site's getting now? And if you're happy to share, if not all good, the revenue numbers?
I'm a little reluctant to share exact revenue numbers. I will say it's high four figures per month.
Mm-hmm.
I was before COVID, and when I was going around doing these presentations around the country with the barbershops, I was into the six figures. COVID shot that right to hell. So for the past 3 years, my revenue has been down significantly. I will say that. As far as traffic, 50,000 visits a month, 100,000 page views a month, they're in that range.
God, so what do you put it down to with COVID with killing your revenue like that?
I couldn't travel.
Ah, okay.
Between that and the if you remember particularly the first year of COVID, nobody went to their barber.
Yeah.
And so it's only now getting back to the point where I can start reaching back out to some of these spa franchises and spa barbershops, and they're only now just getting back to their revenue point to where they can start thinking about doing something for their clients like this.
Wow. Okay. And then your current revenue, how is that broken down on your site in terms of percentage from affiliate versus, you know, other forms of revenue?
Sure. I would say very roughly, into thirds, banner advertising, affiliate, and then I kind of count Amazon as a separate revenue source. So that plus a little bit of, sponsored posts kind of thing.
Gotcha. I actually wanted to dive into more of how your site became so, I guess, authoritative and so big within the space. But before that, your banner advertising, how do you decide, or I guess, come up with how much you're going to charge to place a banner on your site?
Yes, very much so. That was an early concern, still is a concern. Initially, I just went with AdSense, like just about everybody else, I just kind of initially just went along with them. Right now, I'm on Ezoic, which also kind of takes care of things, which is much more profitable than AdSense ever was. For selling my own banners or having people come to me with banners separately. Initially, I did a rule of thumb of just 2x what the CPM on AdSense was giving me. Mm-hmm. That's just, you know, a rough kind of thing. Later, I got a little more specific with it by determining the average sale on a vendor.
Yeah.
You know, let's say, you know, $100, for example, and then dividing that up by impressions and some other more minor factor, just to come up with a better baseline of what seemed to be a reasonable charge for banners.
Are you getting affiliate commissions on top of those banner sponsor placements?
Yes.
Okay, now I'm just thinking for myself.
So I am double dipping. Yeah, I'm double dipping on a couple of them. There were a few advertisers that requested no double dipping, and I was happy with that. I didn't have a problem with that at all. I certainly understand their point of view. So if they request no double dipping, I'm happy to honor that.
Do you find the banners convert better or worse than, say, within text affiliate style article?
Yeah. Wet shaving specific banners convert, I would say, at least 50% better than just a plain vanilla banner. On Sharpologist, very broadly, the CTR is on the order of 0.0. What is it? 0.008. That's called 0.01%. And a typical ad for specifically for a shaving product is generally 0.2.
Okay.
And in one case, just a couple days ago, I looked at it. There is actually a banner running on my site right now with a 0.98 CTR, which is just phenomenal. It's just like, whoa, where did this come from? But I'm not arguing with it.
Yeah, fair enough. So then how did this site become such a big player in the space? I know you started a long time ago. That kind of gave you the long road and time to kind of build the trust and authority with the site. But what has let it get to that level?
A lot of it is I've endured. The test of time, if you will. I've been around long enough to create the authority. You know, particularly in these niche forums. I've been around since the very beginning, since they started. So I'm a well-known name, well-known user. These days, I do not post very much, if at all, because it tends to bring out the trolls. And in one case, one particular niche forum views my website as a competitor. So they actually kicked me off the forum. I'm still trying to understand their thinking on that, but whatever. Yeah. But I still browse the and read the forums quite regularly, and will write content directed to what I found on the forums, and keep them in mind, and try not to make the site as salesy or only interested in the marketing aspect. I want to make it useful for people, and a lot of the content is also evergreen. In fact, I'm starting to have trouble finding new keywords and new content to talk about, simply because I've been doing it for 10 years and I'm kind of running out of things to talk about. Of course I can revisit certain topics and things like that, but a razor is a razor, and a new type of razor doesn't come out very often. Although I will say one did come out about a month ago that's actually quite interesting, and I'm trying to get more information on it. But anyway, long story short, it's a subject that is relatively stable.
Did you actively build links to the site then as it was growing?
No, I did not. Okay. I that's another time suck that I have just not gotten into. Yeah. Luckily, again, the expertise and time and authority has gotten me some good backlinks. Mm. But I don't actively go for backlinks. It's just too much time for very little return.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I guess the other thing is as well with the forums, because you obviously have niche specific forums for shaving. Do you ever dive into Reddit for some of that as well? Because you mentioned the trolling and all that stuff, and I'm thinking like there's literally Reddit, just people who have no idea about anything on there. So whatever you post just gets slammed.
There are two major subreddits on shaving, plus another half dozen or so more minor subreddits that don't get as much traffic. It's come to the point where I will, when I want to post something, I will clear it with the moderators before I post it, because inevitably somebody will come and say, oh, he's got a commercial site, he's just trolling for traffic, self-promotion, yada yada. And I clear it with the mods, and at the very beginning of what I do post, I say, this post has been cleared by the mods. And that cuts down on 90% of the trolling. And in fact, occasionally mods have jumped into threads and said, hey, yes, he cleared this to us. This is genuine. This is not a sales pitch. This is what he's really doing. That's how I approach Reddit. Reddit is extremely difficult to navigate when it comes to stuff like that.
I don't even bother anymore. It just got to a point where I was just like, I'm just not, like, it's not worth it. Not worth my time. Like anything you post, if it has an email opt-in, it doesn't even matter what's on the page. If you're just selling something on the website, it's self-promotion, ban, troll, whatever it is. And it's just not worth it.
Right. Exactly. Luckily, I have a good reputation and a good friendship, I guess, or a good relationship, I should say, with the mods of the major shaving subreddits. They know me.
Yeah.
And as long as I follow some of their rules and don't put in too many self-referential links and things like that, they're usually fine. Mm. But I always clear it with them first.
Yeah. I want to come back to your affiliate style content as well. So I'm assuming you're reviewing shavers or the list that you're giving for shaving for certain needs. How are you, I guess, writing these reviews and showing that authenticity and trust? Are you going in and taking pictures or videos of you using the razors? How are you testing them to show the differences between, I guess, what's better than the other?
Yeah, absolutely. I do. I can't tell you how many razors and brushes and creams and soaps I have, but it's in the hundreds of each. And I test everything that I write about. And if I don't know a particular sub niche, like for example, head shaving, I do have a few freelancers that work for me that do, like I've got one that does head shaving, one that does all straight razors, things like that. And they write that particular content for me. They do get a byline. I do pay for the content. I pay per word and
you send them free product.
I sometimes send them free product. Sometimes I ask them to contact a vendor or a brand and let them say, hey, I'm doing an article for Sharpologist. They drop my name. A lot of times the brand will come back to me and said, is this true? I say, yes. and then they send them the free product. On the other hand, sometimes I just put the cost of them buying whatever they're using into what I'm paying them for the article.
Yeah, gotcha. No, that's good. That's a good way of doing it, having testing for all the products, having hands-on use and everything with that. So
Google, lately has kind of cut down on this whole listicle thing of the 10 best X, and they are able to see, well, these just come from Amazon comments, and they downgrade that article. Whereas if I actually test each one, write my own opinion, and along with that, say, here's what else is being said about it, and then mention other reviews like on Amazon or Reddit or wherever, Google's fine with that.
Yeah, I'm doing the same thing. I've got all my stuff that I've purchased that I've used, individually review individual photos, explain why that best one is better than the other ones because it has these things, it feels like this, et cetera, et cetera. And then kind of go through the list, best for this, best for that, best for that.
Right.
And maybe others worth mentioning just, you know, while they're in there. But I have used them and tested them, as you mentioned. But what kind of criteria are you using then for shavers? Because I'm assuming, well, I'm just trying to think off the top of my head what I would think to use for a shave. And I can only really think of like maybe like the blades or the sharpness, but there must be a whole bunch of other criteria that you have there.
Sure. There are things like the weight of the razor, the balance of the razor, which can be quite important, the length of the handle. There are a number of different handle lengths. The head of a razor is interesting because it can be engineered to become milder or more aggressive with certain specifications. Like, for example, the blade angle, the blade gap, which is the gap between the blade edge and the skin guard. There's also the type of blade. This is more relevant to like double-edged razors versus cartridge razors, but a razor edge is not necessarily a razor edge, even though it may look the same. Even for like, for example, a Mach 3 coming from Gillette versus a clone Mach 3 coming from Amazon, it may all fit in the same handle, but the blade specifications could be completely different. So it's very much a your mileage may vary kind of thing, where a set of specifications for one person who really likes it may be awful for another person, and they don't like it with the same specifications. There are just so many variables involved that there's quite a lot to write about.
Yeah, I can tell that if someone came to your site reading, for example, what you're telling me now, I'm going to be able to nail down exactly the shaver that, you know, works for whatever my needs are. And I think that's a big thing for converting reviews versus, I mean, a lot of the reviews you see on Google, still on Google now, where it's kind of like a rehash of the description and the features. You
right.
Know, okay, but I don't care about the description and the features. I wanted to know exactly, you know, how does it feel? Is it going to shave a thick beard that is X long with sensitive skin or something like that?
Exactly.
And something you've tested and shown and have expertise in helps with that conversion.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. Perfect. And I want to dive into as well, I guess, your strategy along the informational content, the tutorials. How are you using those? I guess, how are you using those to make money? Because you're doing affiliate stuff. You've got informational content to bring people to the site. But then what's the next step for the person coming to the site after they've read your tutorial? Do you have anything they can buy other than the affiliate stuff or anything they can do?
Actually, at the moment, there is no product with a Sharpologist brand, although I have been approached a number of times to do so. I just haven't done it yet. What I do is within a particular post, I will use anchor text to either link to another article on the site that does show a number of products,
mm-hmm.
or if it's relevant to the article, I will do a link to, in a lot of cases, a service called Genius Link, which gives me, it's called a choice page, where I can take a product and give the reader a choice of a number of different outlets. And each one of those outlets happens to be an affiliate outlet. Mm-hmm. For example, here's, I may mention a particular razor, the Mirkur 34C, which is an extremely popular razor, double-edged razor for old school. And rather than just say the 34C link to Amazon, I'll link it to a Genius Link choice page where it's Amazon, Walmart, Target, Walgreens, half a dozen different places that all sell the 34C, but no matter where they get it from, I still get the affiliate, the affiliate charge for it. So it is kind of, I don't want to say buried in a tutorial, but it's not the main point of a tutorial. For example, I've just did an article about how to get a better shave on your neck without getting torn up.
I went through that today.
Okay. Well, then you noticed that I made two specific suggestions for razors. One was for the Gillette Skin Guard, and the other was for the One Blade razor, because they both had pivots. And those two razors, those links, even though this is an article about how to shave better, was an item in that pointed to an affiliate product.
Gotcha.
And other links in that article pointed to other articles on the site that went more deeply into a particular topic. And that article would contain affiliate links.
Gotcha. Have you found that some programs convert better than others within your six pack of Genius Link links?
Yes. Amazon converts quite well. One particular wet shaving vendor that's been around forever, well known in the niche, they convert very well. Some of the individual artisans that I link to, for example, Phoenix Artisan Accoutrements is a vendor that they have their own products and they convert quite well. So it just depends on the particular product, but overall, very broadly speaking, Amazon converts well, and just because it's so well known and so trusted, and some of those niche vendors, like places like Walgreens and Walmart, not so much, even though they're well known, just not so much.
And their commissions are even smaller than Amazon, aren't they?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. so now, those are, yeah, some anyway. Of the, some of the vendor, I have affiliate relationships with specifically, I get a custom commission rate. But yeah, the big ones like Walmart, it's practically nothing.
So how did you, I guess, build these relationships with these shaver companies to get custom? So I guess for anyone listening, perhaps maybe they're promoting whatever it is on their site and they want to be able to have a direct relationship with that company with custom commissions. How did you go about that?
You know, in a couple cases, they came to me. They noticed traffic coming from my site. They want to take advantage of that traffic and grow it. And so to incentivize me to write more about those particular products, they gave me a custom commission. In a couple other cases, they had existing commission relationships with a number of people, say on Share a Sale. And yeah. I went to them and said, hey, look, you know, I've got this site specifically on shaving, highly targeted. In some cases, I can just tell the guy, you know me, you know the site. how about a custom commission structure? And 9 times out of 10, they're happy to do it.
That easy.
Well, because of the authority. It's because of the authority and the length of time of the site.
Yeah,
for sure. I do get lucky in that respect, yes. And I know it.
Yeah, I've had the same experience with companies reaching out. Like I had a company reaching out for a long time, over and over. But you know what it is? A lot of them you ignore because they're just asking for links or whatever it is. You just like can't be bothered. But they got in touch with one of my other writers and coaches on my site. And then he put me in touch. And I was like, okay, fine. But then from there, it's been a really good relationship. They've got free stuff. I've got co-branded gear with them now, custom commissions, all that kind of stuff. And that's been awesome. So yeah, as you mentioned, as your site grows, people will find you. People will find you. Companies will find you because they want to get their products in front of the eyes that you have with your audience.
Yeah. I should mention that I do get offers of free product all the time. And I actually turn it down 9 times out of 10. It's just like free product does not put food on my table, does not put clothes on my back. Sorry. I've actually got a page on my site under the disclosures that say, whenever possible, I will buy a product versus getting one free.
Interesting. Yeah, I've had the same, but I won't turn the free product down. I'll tell them I don't want just free. I don't work on just the free product or whatever it is. I work on the affiliate commission, sponsored placements, all that stuff. So if we're going to do the free product, this is what I want first.
With it,
exactly. Because it's just they want to pay for a review. It's like, I don't want to get paid for a review. I want the commissions that I'm going to bring you, and then I'm going to have more skin in the game. I want to be able to promote you if it's good. I want to be able to promote it more, etc., etc. So yeah, exactly the same as you there.
Yeah.
Oh, perfect. And the other question is, you mentioned obviously, say for example, that neck shaving article, and you're talking about, okay, these are the two shavers because they have the pivot. Here's the links to them. Do you ever link out to an individual review of that shaver instead? So you have like a full-on detailed review of just that shave that you'd link to?
Occasionally, yes, depending on the particular product. a lot of the products I review are relatively new to the market, so there aren't a whole lot of reviews. Mm-hmm. When there are reviews, I do link out to them. Along with my own review, I'll say, you know, here's what everybody else is saying about it. Link out to a review blog post or more likely a YouTube video by some other wet shaving YouTube person. Let them see that video, watch that video on my page because it keeps them on my page longer. And then do my own review after that, you know, saying, here's what other people say, here's what I say. I also have occasionally talk about do kind of like a mini review of something, like that one blade razor, for example, that I mentioned in that neck article. I will do a link back to my in-depth a review of the One Blade Razor specifically.
Yeah.
And that's on my site. And that has affiliate links off of that article.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's interesting that you that in your review, you'll link out to other videos, websites of this is what other people think and this is what I think. I guess the question is, I don't know, have you tested the other way of just having your opinion on there or just your videos and things like that too? Have you found that this way just seems to work better?
It doesn't, at the moment, doesn't seem to make much of a difference one way or the other. I did it really because of Google guidelines more recently that say, you know, we're looking for genuine opinions, not just yours. We're looking for, we want you to be helpful. And in the course of being helpful, if that means linking out to another review, I'm okay with that.
Okay. And then I wanted to come back to the forum thing as well. You mentioned obviously you take some topics from forums to write about. Will you write about that topic even if it's not a, I guess, keyword with volume?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. I will. Because it may not be keyword in Google, but it's top of mind in the niche. So that keeps me in good graces with the, what I call the shave nerds. The guys that have, you know, dived down the rabbit hole like me, that keeps them engaged and coming back to the site as well. And in fact, I created a app for myself that scans the RSS feeds of the web forums, the niche forums, and it lets me scan topics, the subjects of the forum post. And I found it so valuable, I actually tweaked it and put it on the site so everybody else could. Yes, it's called the discussions link. And you can click on that and say, I'm interested in learning about razors. And so you click on the razors link and it shows you all the forum discussions about razors over the past day or so in these niche forums. And a lot of people have found that to be very useful.
I guess
I really need to make that like a freemium feature where maybe you have to sign up for my my email newsletter to access it. But so far, I just leave it as a free function of the site.
Or you can create your own forum.
I've been down that road in the past and I'm not going there again. It is just way too much time to moderate and keep track of. Not going there.
What's the main time such just the moderating? You'd have to hire someone to be a mod, or is there other things that become issues with hosting a forum?
It's mainly keeping it, keeping the spam and trolls at bay takes a lot of, it's very time consuming. It's very labor intensive. I would have to hire somebody and I just don't think the return on investment would be worth hiring somebody to do the admin and mod work.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And I guess going forward from 2022 into 2023, what is the plan to continue growing SharpHolic, like to really grow the site to a place where maybe you're getting back to, you know, 5-6 figures kind of thing?
Yeah, I have a goal for next year of starting to get back to doing the presentation things where I would go out to the spa barbershops and present to clients. I'm toying with the idea of doing a coaching or a course on on specifically straight razors, because that's very difficult to learn. The learning curve is quite a bit. I might even do a less expensive course, maybe even a really cheap course on beginner shavers, you know, teenagers, guys just starting out, you know, don't have a, may not have a father figure in the house, may have a father figure that that shaves with an electric razor and they want to try a manual razor, just don't know what's going on. And kind of toying with that idea for next year too.
That sounds like the best, literally the best idea for the site. If you had a couple of courses like that, even priced at like $27, $47, whatever it is, dollars.
And I was actually thinking 17. I mean, yeah, very, very low. Something that a teenager could afford.
Yeah. And even the straight razor one, like you go into these
barbers. Oh, no, that would be a more expensive one. Yeah.
Fair enough. But you go into these shops and teaching this stuff anyway. If you do it in a course form, man, people can access it anywhere. You can monetize all over your site, your email list, all of that. It just sounds right. Like the logical next step.
Right.
Yeah. That's a really good idea. So are you currently collecting emails?
Oh, yes. I've been collecting emails for years. I've got an email list of about 8,000. Nice. I put out a newsletter every week. I've got an onboarding campaign that's really almost 5 months long. That is strictly strictly tutorial content. That's all it is. So I get very few new users right now. It's maybe 8 to 10 a day. But by the end of the automation, they are very highly engaged. And when they finally drop into the main list where I send something out every week, I have open rates on the order of 40%.
Nice.
And as high as 60%. Wow. And click through rates 15, 20% routinely. That's what a good onboarding automation will give you.
Damn. So when you launch a course, then you're going to be sorted with stats like that.
I hope so. Yeah.
So it's interesting how you mentioned. So you're doing on the onboarding, you're doing what, like your newsletter, one email a week with the onboarding with all tutorial.
Yep.
Okay.
One a week. And then when they drop into the main list, that's also once a week. Every once in a while, I'll do a second one if there's something really worth putting out, or in some cases really worth asking, because I've occasionally send a list to like a poll or a questionnaire to the list to gather information as research for an article. But I try not to overly saturate someone's email box, because then it just dumps into spam and I lose that engagement.
With the tutorial content, are you just linking them back to your website to where you have the tutorial, or are you actually writing within the email itself with no links?
Most of them are within the article itself with no links. Every once in a while, it'll be an email for a topic that is so in depth that I say, well, here's the majority of it. If you really want to do more, here's an article I've written. Go see that. But it is primarily to keep you on that email message as long as possible.
Mm. No, I like that. I like that. And the opt-in as well. What are you using as your lead magnet to get people on that list?
Right now, all it is a couple of pop-ups that come up at the end of articles saying, if you would like to know more about this way of shaving, join the Sharpologist email list for tutorials, article summaries, product discounts, things like that. And that's it. That's the only lead-in. Yes, I do need to make lead magnets. I've tried things in the past, but that's something that has never trended very well. I've tried ebooks, I've tried resource guides, and they don't convert well for whatever reason. Next year, I'm going to try some simple giveaways. Like if you sign up for the list, I will send you a door hanger that says "Do not disturb, I'm shaving." You know, it costs me. Cost me a dollar to make and send, you know, so it's not that big. The ROI would be good for something like that. I also work with some advertisers to do giveaways, and mm-hmm. I'll do a giveaway kind of thing where I share the list of contestants with the advertiser, of course, but then I will also take those contestant emails and drop them into my main list too. So yeah. I get a little more that way. And the giveaway even says that. It says your email address will be shared between advertiser X and Sharpologist.
Do you find that the lower quality leads because they signed up for a giveaway?
It depends on the lead. The lower value leads tend to generate lower quality responses. When the leads are very targeted and they know it's a good deal, the response is a little better.
Interesting.
But yeah, I've had to clean the list a couple times because of just low engagement and things like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What would be an example, I guess, in your niche with a super target, I guess, a targeted giveaway campaign versus one that's maybe lower quality?
Sure. There was one. The company name is Mondial. It's an Italian shaving brand which has just launched into the U.S. and they are a high-end shaving brand, and they were offering, I think, a half a dozen different prizes, and some of those prizes were worth several hundred dollars, like custom-made shave brushes, very high-end razors, some very high-quality products that the typical wet shaver, when they see that, they would say, "Whoa, that's a prize." And they would jump. Somebody that would normally not sign up for an email would be incentivized to do so for that.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. So I guess it's valuable within that specific community. Like, they understand the value of what's going on
there. Right. Right.
Gotcha. Perfect. I think we've gone through pretty much all the questions I had for your site, Mark, but I guess if anyone wants to find you, follow you with what you're doing, anything like that, where can they find you?
Sure. The site is sharpologist.com. I'm on Facebook with either the Sharpologist page or the Mantic 59 page. You'll see a lot of my social media accounts as Mantic 59, which was actually a screen name I had many, many years ago before using real names became a thing. Screen names were the thing to do. So I actually became much more well known as Mantic 59 than as Mark. So again, Twitter, Mantic 59 account. There is a Sharpologist account as well that is a little less trafficked. Just dipping my feet into Instagram and Pinterest, both on Mantic 59 channels. I would say I was most active on Twitter, but recent events on Twitter has kind of let me pull back a little bit on that. But I'm still there for the moment. I'm still there.
Nice. Perfect. So if anyone's interested in learning more about shaving or about Mark, go visit those and visit sharpologist.com as well. But thank you for coming on, Mark. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing everything to do with your site.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And I hope you at some point change your mind and start shaving.
I don't think that's ever going to... I'm keeping this for life.
Oh,
just,
okay.
Just maintaining. It's staying.
Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you're listening. Until the next episode, goodbye.